Welcome to Spill the Chai. I'm Rabia.
I'm Lucy.
I'm Rither.
And this is our first proper full episode of Spill the Chai. Cheers. And we have got cups of tea in front of us this time.
Yeah, we do.
Unlike last time, which was a poor show. on this episode, our rich tea topic will be about our collective experience being mixed race in Britain. And I think that'll be quite a juicy topic as we talk about what that experience means to each of us. And then coming up later, we'll talk about things that can get in the bin. It's a section of the show. In fact, I'll leave you to introduce it when we come on to it, Lucy.
Okay.
And then we'll also talk about stuff that we're loving. And then leave you all. So, yes, let's get into
the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, the nitty-gritty of Spill the Chai. Probably some intro music at this point. Yeah. I don't know.
Can you sing it?
Is there a song? Is there any song about tea that we should know about? There isn't, is
maybe,
there?
Maybe we write one.
Yeah, maybe we do.
Like RuPaul style.
Oh, right. Yes. Or Adam Buxton style. Have you heard his jingles? I'm going off topic. Ignore me.
I love it. But shout out to the other podcasts, I guess. this week's or this month's, or I'm not sure how frequently we're releasing this, but this week's Spill the Chai rich tea topic is around being mixed race. And you know what? I'm not going to start. I'm going to go to Lucy first, and then we can go around, because I think it's so different for all of us.
And yeah.
We'll start with you. And Lucy, tell us sort of your ethnic heritage, so to speak. Start from there.
Where am I from?
Where are you from? Where are you really from? Don't you just love a microaggression in a podcast?
Yeah, but what have you got in you?
Have you ever had a bit of Irish in you?
I have, actually.
Amazing.
They have the best accent.
Yeah, they do.
Anyway, tell us.
Right, yes, tell me. I was born in Birmingham.
Shout out to the Brumbies. Boop, boop.
to a white mama from the Midlands, and my dad is Egyptian. And we moved to Saudi Arabia when I was two, lived there for 3 years, I think, and then came back, moved to Kent, a place called Herne Bay, which is so white, so incredibly white. And then I moved to London when I was 17, lived there until like 18 months ago, almost 2 years ago, when I moved to Brighton. Also very white. it's been a really weird, long process with my heritage, because I'm white passing, and that's a term that I only was told about by a white woman, like 2 years ago. I didn't even know what to categorise myself, and I really have pretty much all the privilege of a white woman, but I also don't necessarily look white.
Mm. Yeah.
And people, Arabs, Egyptian people particularly, will be able to tell that I'm sure you guys have this as well. Like, yeah. Mm. People who are from, like, where you're from. But, I mean, even saying that, I find it really hard to talk about, because I don't feel like I sit in any camp. as it were.
Yeah, like, I get that.
I am super proud of being half Egyptian, or being Egyptian, but also I'm not Muslim. So that really puts me, like, a lot of Muslims who aren't from Egypt will often, you know, tell me about what I consider to be part of my culture that either I don't know about or I don't know a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
So because my dad was, I should explain, my dad was Muslim, but he was atheist, basically. Mm-hmm. And my mum is Baptist and I was brought up Christian. So I sit in, like, a lot of different...
It's confusing.
Yeah. I know, it's, I'm a very confused human being.
Yeah, it's confusing when you're, like, transplanted from... Yeah. One culture to another, and then there are so many layers within that.
Yeah,
it is complex, and I think confusion is a way of us processing those complexities. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And how did that? How over the years have you managed to foster a sense of belonging or get that sense?
I don't think I have, you know, because. So I was very lucky in that when we moved to Kent, so when my dad came over from Egypt, he travelled a lot and then he moved to London, to Clapham, with two of his best friends and lots of, like, Egyptians that he, like, travelled with when they were really young. I mean, he lived in England longer than he's dead now, but he lived in England longer than he lived in Egypt, so okay. And he didn't really he along with, like, the other Egyptians, so we had, like, a community really of his, they were almost like his brothers. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with their children, like my cousins, we would just call them cousins, and auntie. Aww. And uncle, and I'm still close to them now. But not everybody was Muslim, nobody was practicing, so, like,
yeah,
one of my dad's closest friends is Coptic Christian, and they're both Egyptian, so we didn't have any real Egyptian traditions apart from the food. So yeah. I think the only way I've really held on to any kind of feeling of this is mine is with food.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've brought into my family. So on Christmas Day this year, for the first time, I was like, do you know what? I really want to do Arabic breakfast. And that's what we did. Aww. Because of Taj.
Yeah.
So there's a shop in Brighton that sells loads and loads of, it's Indian food, Pakistani food, loads of different types. Is it Indian? Do you know?
I don't know if it is, actually.
I don't know.
But they sell a lot of, like...
Loads of Arabic food.
Yeah, they do.
And they've also got, like, Whole Foods and stuff.
Mm.
In fact, I think they might be Arabic because yeah. When we were looking for hummus, which in the end we got from Waitrose opposite, we were looking at it and Ollie was like, why don't they have that specific hummus? And I was like, because it's Israeli.
Yeah, Sabra's.
Yeah, Sabra. Yeah. Anyway, that's as an aside. So yeah, that's me.
Oh.
And also I married a white man,
as have all of us.
Quite interesting.
I find it interesting because actually a lot of the anti-racism educators online
have also
have white partners.
Yes.
And not all of them, of course, but, like, a few prominent ones that I know. Yeah. And follow, they have also. And I don't know if, like, I can really, I wouldn't make a judgment on that. I just noted it as an observation. I don't think it matters because I genuinely believe you're attracted to who you're attracted to.
Yeah.
You know, watching Love is Blind.
I have not.
That's what you're loving at the moment.
That's what I'm loving at the moment, yeah.
I've not been watching it. Is it a Netflix thing that I didn't know about?
It's a Netflix thing. It's interesting, though, because...
it's very problematic.
They can't see each other. I'm going to be quick because it is actually relevant.
Yeah.
So I can't remember her name. It's Carlton, I think.
Diamond.
No, not Carlton, sorry. Not Carlton and Diamond. Is it Lauren and scientist dude who's tall?
Cameron.
Cameron Zuri. Okay, so the premise is that they can't see each other, but they speak to each other, and then they propose.
Oh.
And then they get married at the end of a month, right? So they have, wow, like this, like, 3 weeks.
That's big commitment for the sake of entertainment.
Mm. It is, but it's also a social experiment, essentially, isn't it? Like, if you can't see anybody, are you still... Can you connect on a level where you want to love and marry somebody?
People do all the time.
Yeah, they do. Well, this is interesting, because I spoke to Chris about it after. But anywho, so this Lauren... Is it Lauren?
Yes, Lauren,
so
yeah.
Lauren is a black woman, and mm-hmm. she actually says that... She's a content creator, and she says that she speaks... up about her experience as a black woman, mm-hmm. often on her in her social circles, and she's never been with a white man, mm-hmm. but the person that she falls for in this, like, these pods they call them, mm-hmm. Is a white man.
Okay,
like the tallest, whitest man you'll see, and they connect.
And he has had previously, his most serious relationship was with a black woman.
Woman, yeah, and it's just, it's interesting to me. Like, because I do think that you can be attracted to anybody, mm. regardless of, like, race.
Evidently.
Yeah, evidently. So, yeah. So in terms of it being, like, this is just going on a bit. But, you know, when we look at those, like, black women who are with white men, or us who, brown women who are with white men, like, actually, it doesn't water down our experience of who we are. Like, it doesn't...
No, I don't think...
Does that make sense? Yeah. It does afford us some privilege in certain ways, I think.
Yeah, and I've not spent a lot of time reflecting on this, and it's something that I probably want to dig deeper into this year, was making the choices that I have. And, I mean, ultimately, like, my choice of life partner, we have a lot of things in common, and... And, you know, I think Alex is literally perfect for me. But in terms of being attracted to him, something that I want to, like, unpick, I think, at some point this year. And, you know, would I make the same choice now, kind of thing?
I
think I would, 100%.
I don't know if I would have. Like, a lot of my... awakening last year had me very frustrated and probably angry at Chris just for being a white man, and it was really difficult because I'd never sort of seen him as that before and it was difficult in lots of ways, and I almost resented the fact that he was white, and I questioned whether if I'd been woke sooner, would I have married a white man?
Yeah.
And I actually don't know because, you know, love is blind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, like, you just don't know. But it did make me question, would I have made the same choice, having sort of awakened to all of this?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. So it's so complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
But through that awakening and learning, you go through these complex feelings. And again, like with your identity, you, like, the same thing happened because I was trying to find myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just layers upon layers. It would be a meal free if it was a food.
Yeah.
Trying to, like...
Christ, that a was layer. A really beautifully...
I love
beautifully
a meal free.
What's
it? I love a meal free.
Yeah.
Or a lasagna.
Yeah. Give me all the cheese.
I love a meal free.
Or a lasagna.
Or a trifle.
Get those layers.
So, we were talking about your experiences with us. So I think, tell us, what are you?
Who are you?
I don't know.
But what are you made of, though? Like, where are you really from?
But it's, I feel like it's really sad. Like, often I could just sit and cry in a corner about, like, how much of myself, like, I lost.
So tell us, go back from the beginning. Go back from the beginning.
Rewind.
Where were you born? Who were your parents?
How did
you come to be here?
Could I also just quickly at this point say, we talked about this on my podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, that'll be amazing. We'll link back to your episode. What she said, which is coming back.
Woo, 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 woo. We can't wait.
So go on, Rida.
Oh yeah, yeah. That I liked talking to you, Lucy.
That was, I like talking to you too.
Yeah, well,
all right.
Smooching.
I know.
So I was born in Pakistan.
Whereabouts?
I was born in Islamabad. Rapid. In Pakistan, and only like a month or two after you, it's true. And so my papa is half Welsh, half Pakistani, like white Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
And my mama is just Pakistani, I think a mixture of Pakistani. And my grandparents were pre-partition.
So India.
Yeah.
We're all Indian, really.
We're all Indian. No, it's true, like, or Indo-Pak, as the region was called. It's such a lame name, I feel. Anyway. So I was born in Pakistan in October 1985. And, yeah, my papa's half white, half Pakistani, and mama's just Pakistani. Not just, she is Pakistani. And they were sort of hippie, free-loving, like, I don't know, free-loving, actually. That's like, they were hippie-ish, and, you know, they were young when they had me. And I have really fond memories of growing up in Pakistan with my nano, which is my grandmother, maternal grandmother. And my aunts and uncles, not so much my uncles, but that's a different topic. And I'm so glad that I have those memories of being there, of like the snow. Yes, it snows in Pakistan. In Islamabad, like, we'd go up to, oh my gosh, I can't even remember
Murray.
The name right there. Yeah, thank you. Murray, we'd go up to Murray. But the roads on the way up there, they like were covered in snow, like thick snow.
I got altitude sickness when I went.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
This little girl from like the UK just was like,
ugh. Oh, I loved it.
It's beautiful.
But I was also terrified because they used to tell me about like the witches that would dance on their tin roofs at night.
That's terrifying.
I was like, can we please go before it's dark? I don't know, yeah. You're like, I think like it's a rite of passage as a young, I don't know, Pakistani girl or Pakistani kiddo.
Yeah.
Like you will be told about the
ghost stories,
which are like
witches
and stuff.
And how old were you when you left?
About 6 and a half,
oof.
I think. And Myri was, I guess, 2.
Your younger sister.
2 and a half, 3. Yeah, so she's my younger sister.
Does she remember?
She she doesn't remember anything.
Do you? And did you go straight to Birmingham, or did you move?
Moved straight to Birmingham, and then the uncle that we share.
Yeah,
We lived with them for a little bit.
Shout out to
and
Imran.
It's also the house that I used to look at Rabia with. I think, like through the top upstairs window, I remember Rabia arriving in her car and then also going in her car and then look at each other through the windows and do like our little nanu nanu. I remember it so vividly. I loved Rabia so much.
I remember
so
that
much.
House. Yeah, in my mind.
It was tiny, really.
But in my mind, it had a really long front room, back room.
Yeah, it was quite like a longish back
I felt
room.
Like for
we
me.
We used to run around in and pay Sega Mega Drive in the mornings with my cousins.
Vintage.
So I moved to England, to Birmingham specifically, because we had like family there.
Mm.
And I had such an amazing time when I was a kid. Because I grew up in Handsworth in Birmingham, which is, you know, really mixed culturally.
It's quite diverse.
Like loads of specifically black Jamaican folks and loads of Indian Sikh folks specifically, but Hindus as well.
Yeah, because some of our other mutual cousins have quite a lot of Sikh friends as well.
Yeah. And it was just really mixed, and I never was made fun of. For like, because I cannot remember not speaking English, but apparently I used to run around the playground speaking Urdu.
That's so cute.
I know, I love that so much. But I was made to feel like I could just be myself.
That's brilliant.
It's because a lot of my like little kid friends, they spoke Punjabi and stuff, so right. For them I think it was normal.
Yeah. So did you feel like you belonged? Like
yeah,
you didn't not
at primary
have a,
school.
You didn't have a sense of, you did not have a sense of belonging at primary
yeah.
school. And so do you think that, did that change at some point in your life?
Yeah, when? Secondary school ruined me.
Go on, tell us all about.
Thing. Didn't you find secondary school
yeah,
hard?
I did, yeah. I did. I felt like I belonged nowhere.
Yeah. Well, speak about it, because I feel like we can all like chip in here.
Well, then I feel like I've...
No, because like it's like secondary school is like a real like,
I had racism
point.
At primary school though.
You did?
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Well, that's awful. What happened?
Well, it was...
If you want to talk about it, just
yeah, no, no, no. Totally fine. Because I was in such a white area, my first primary school, which was a C of E school in our village, it wasn't really a village, it was like a town.
Yeah.
I don't really remember there being anybody else of colour, but I think there probably was, but... Actually, some of my cousins were there for a bit. but I was called... Should I say the P word?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, so you we don't have to blank it out. Yeah. As in just say the
yeah,
P
yeah,
word.
Yeah.
Yeah, when
yeah, 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 that's fine.
Use the term. I'm sure you can
yeah.
guess what it is, readers. All the time. Until yeah. I... Yeah, like... in.
That always seems the default.
That was
you're brown.
That was mm-hmm. the standard racist.
But it was hurtful
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, it was hurtful. Yeah, of course.
I am Pakistani, yeah. so Paki to me. I was like, yeah, but I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is that an insult? Yeah.
But
yeah.
why are you using my
heritage against you?
Identity? Yeah. yeah. Why are you using that as a?
I found it
a,
ironic because I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. yeah. No, I like as I grew up, it was
yeah,
offensive
of course.
Because
yeah.
I was just like,
you know, the intent behind
it's
it.
It's not. Yeah. Yeah. My mama reclaimed it. She was like, yeah. So I am Paki. Sorry.
yeah. It'd be a bit like somebody just saying, "Ugh, you Arab." Be like, yeah,
yeah,
that's absolutely right.
yeah, yeah, exactly.
anyway, oh. sorry, I interjected there. But but secondary school, yeah.
But you knew what it meant.
Yeah. I knew what it meant.
You were othered.
That's
yeah.
it, yeah.
yeah.
And I was very young. I was like 5 or 6. And I remember saying to my mum's best friend, who was white, saying, oh, I wish I was white like you. I really remember that because
yeah.
I remember her saying, I wish I had your skin tone. That's why
yeah.
I'm always out in the sun. I remember her saying that, but my mum not necessarily knowing how to handle it.
It just breaks my heart. It does.
Yeah.
Because you know from a very young age, like, actually I would argue that when we're young, we have a very strong sense of self.
Yeah.
And we lose that with all the input that we get from
yeah.
the
Yeah, because we're so vulnerable and we'll just say, won't we? We look at other people and I see how Anais, my daughter, looks at other people and goes, why is she we walked past somebody who was cleaning her car and her like trousers had slipped down so you could see like her bum crack and then I just walked past and went, Mummy, why is her bum out?
Yeah.
it was pretty, it was so funny. But yeah, I would agree with you, that's when you're so vulnerable to
yeah.
being othered and being very aware of yourself. But secondary school, I think, is when it's almost like your nerve endings are exposed.
Yeah, it's like you're like born again, sort of, because it's such a massive pool, like literally like of so many more people.
So tell us about your high school experience.
You tell us about yours.
Well, I feel like I had to start from the beginning as well, but not too dissimilar to your experience. I was born in Islamabad as well. A month before Ritha, and we happen to be related.
No way.
I know, no way. But when I was 11 months old, my parents emigrated to the UK, to Manchester. My dad is half English, half Pakistani. My mum is, I'd say, full Pakistani. She was born in Dhaka, Bangladesh, just before it became Bangladesh.
Yeah.
But my grandparents are from Lucknow in India. and Bareilly, which is also part of the region of Uttar Pradesh. I don't even know my dad's side. I don't even know. But my dad was born in Quetta, Pakistan, which is quite a mountainous, famous for its earthquakes. They came when I was only 11 months old. So for all intents and purposes, you know, when I tell people that I'm born in Pakistan, they're like, what? What's it like? I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I could have been born here because I was a baby when I came here. So I don't
like no memory.
I have no memory of it. Yeah. I don't have any emotional ties, or I didn't have, I guess, until more recently after learning about the colonial history and feeling, and then I've got more sort of emotion tied to it. And I've only ever been back once, and it was when my uncle got married in 1995, and Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge had just come out, and it was that was like, it's one of the most famous like Bollywood films, just talking to Lucy, and it was the soundtrack to the wedding.
Oh,
pretty much, because I remember my uncle's and auntie's Mendi, and that music being played, Mendi Lagaga, it was all playing as well, and all the aunties were sitting there clapping on the ground doing the singing, and that was like my real first experience and memory of Pakistan, and seeing the trucks and their art and their jingling little tassels and the dusty roads and my grandmother's many fruit trees. Drone bees that were all jet black with no stripes on them.
Ooh. Yeah, advanced as well.
I had never seen them.
What the hell are these?
My aunt, they're like bees, but they're black. So they look like giant bumblebees, but black. And I'd never seen them before. I remember the giant drone bees. My grandmother had a bottle brush tree. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're amazing. Green, like parakeets. Frogs that come out at night, cricket, sound of the crickets. Just, it was a full sensory experience that I had for like 3 weeks. And in the midst of it was this huge wedding, like a 5-6 day event, many outfits, weird tasting milk, mango juice every day. And that's kind of my experience of a country that informs a large part of my heritage.
Mm.
But growing up was really difficult because I had no connection beyond my parents and them bringing us aspects of the culture into the home, as well as sort of, I was brought up Muslim and I identify as a Muslim, but as well as sort of those religious experiences. So I had commonality in terms of faith, but I was often questioned by my own peers as to why I'm so fair, because I am quite light-skinned, so I was quite ambiguous to some. But likewise, my white peers didn't question me as much, but yeah, I just felt like as I was a kid, even in primary school, as fun time as I had in my childhood, I felt from primary school that I didn't fit in because we didn't celebrate Christmas and we didn't... sometimes my mum would make me wear Asian clothes and I didn't want to wear them because I wanted to fit in and I wanted to wear jeans and dresses.
What about lunches? I'm sure we all have the same experience with packed lunches.
I loved the lunches that Mama made me, especially kachikimeh ke kebab sandwiches. Kachikimeh ke kebab is basically sandwiches. Kachikimeh is like raw keema, but it's basically like a burger.
Yeah.
Like a Pakistani burger with like, you know.
I'd have shami kebabs and sandwiches.
Yeah, I used to love that. Yummy. I remember. We used to have a mix of like school dinners and packed lunches. I don't know, we were allowed to like mix it up. And I remember, like, just stinking out the room with, like, whenever I'd do it, Mum would put, like, ketchup, cheese, the kebab,
oh, cheese and,
like, yeah, in, like, a sandwich.
That sounds incredible.
So, I'm not joking. Like, I literally can imagine the taste and the smell of it.
I'm salivating.
It was quite watering. Nice, but I'd never get singled out for my food because there'd always be a couple of other brown kids with the same thing.
No, nobody else had these specific sandwiches, but I just remember I loved it so much. And I never had that feeling of, I think because I started in year three when I came over. So I started like partway through year three, I think.
Yeah.
Or like, no, partway through year two, and then went into year three. And then so I never really had that, what you were saying about, like, you wanted to wear jeans and dresses and stuff, because I was allowed to wear that if I wanted. I had this particular...
I was allowed to. Yeah. I was just...
You just didn't
I felt
wear,
a sense of disappointment.
Yeah.
I felt a sense of disappointing my mum.
Yeah.
If I didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I felt pressure. And I just wanted... I just wanted to fit in desperately.
Yeah.
And I think because of my mixed family and sort of sitting in multiple camps... where we did celebrate Christmas at my grandmother's, but not in the home.
Yeah.
So I was allowed to enjoy some things. I basically had to navigate gauging my parents' reactions, what I was and wasn't allowed, what was acceptable and what wasn't. And that was quite tough.
Yeah.
Oh, it is, for sure. I love that. I enjoyed, like, I remember having roasts in Pakistan. My nana used to make roasts. And we had such a rich, like, different types of food and stuff like that from when I was in Pakistan. Like, it wasn't weird to me. And, like, my primary school years were, like, the most liberated, most confident that I have ever been in my life. And I hold that rhythm as, like, the purest, happiest rhythm. I want to protect that. All those feelings that you're talking about, I didn't have those until I was in secondary school.
So let's talk about our mutual high school experience. Tell me about yours. What did you have?
I have to tell you about the velvet shawl kameez, okay? Because you said that you were made. I was so desperate at the Christmas party. I was so fucking proud wearing my massive, like slightly too big for me, black velvet shawl kameez that had little silver coins on them all around.
Do you want to explain what
jingled?
Shalwar kameez is for the
is like,
listeners.
It's basically like a dress and loose trousers.
It's like a dress and loose trousers. It's a long tunic.
It comes in loads of different forms. Just Google it.
It's super stylish.
Like, Google that shit, please.
There was this funny TikTok where someone was like, "Yo, people are wearing shalwars without the kameez," or was it the other way around?
Is the kameez the trousers? No.
Or just not.
Yeah, shalwar is the trousers.
So people wearing kameez without the shalwars, and it was because there was this whole trend of like long tunics with slits down the side, and they were like, "Where's the pants?"
It was so funny. Anyway, you wore some Bessie outfits
to your Christmas party.
But also, I performed when our head teacher, Mr. Tunnicliffe, left. That was like one of my first senses of, apart from moving and saying goodbye to my aunts, like apart from that kind of feeling of loss or something. Like of an ending of an era, like when my head teacher left, we did a dance to Humma, 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 and I wore my big like lenga, not a lenga, ghagra, which is like a thicker, flouncier version of a lenga, and we danced to that. So I feel so lucky that I grew up around such a mix of people. I'll never forget. At Farah's, like, she was a black girl, and at her party, that's when I learned how to do the butterfly. And I remember I was wearing this ridiculous 90s massive pink and blue dress, and like they taught me how to do the butterfly. But that's like, for me, it was such a culturally rich experience growing up, and I felt like I belonged because nobody judged me, nobody expected anything from me.
No one questioned.
Nobody questioned who I was, what I was wearing, what I did, what I ate, nothing like that at all. I was free to be me. Went into secondary school, and then what the hell? I just spent the summer with my cousin, who's super cool, And she had, like, cut her hair into, like, a really cool, like, bob. So I did the same, of course. And so did Myrie.
Oh.
And Heather was all like, why are you copying me? And and then, basically, yeah, I was just, like, picked apart. What are you wearing? Why is your hair like that? You look like a boy. Why are your eyebrows joined together? Yeah. Why do you have a moustache? Yeah. Like,
oh,
literally every single thing about myself that I'd never even thought about was then suddenly, like, put under a magnifying glass. And you're just like, ah, I hate myself. Yeah. So you go from being, like, this completely free, confident person to being put under a microscope, under a white supremacist colonial microscope, like, and it just took everything from me, essentially.
When you were talking, I was like, everything I hate about myself now, and I don't want to say I hate loads of stuff about myself, but when I think about all the things that I still can't get rid of, even when I know it's okay, you should embrace this, it's blah, 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 it all comes from that secondary school experience of being called, monobrow, or, oh, you've got a tash. Yeah. I remember, so my maiden name is Sharif, and the boys used to call me Sharaf.
I feel like I experienced what you experienced, but a lot sooner. So, you know, when 6 weeks holidays, when you go to, like, a play scheme, it's a primary school, and we went to the roller disco, my absolute favourite thing to do, and it was a hot summer's day, and we were walking back from there, and we were walking in a group, and one of the older boys was just like, you've got really long sideburns, you look like Elvis. And I was just like, you know, it's the first time someone had pointed it out.
Yeah, like your appearance.
And I didn't, like, hate my sideburns, but I did, he made me hate them.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of made me look at all the facial hair that I had. Yes, my eyebrows joined together. Even Rafe the other day commented that I've got a mustache because I hadn't waxed it for ages. I was like, oh shit, that's when I know it's time to get rid. Although it's not time, there's no time to get rid of.
For you.
And I've only waxed my sideburns once. I'm not going to do it again because it just made my jaw look even bigger. And actually, do you know, bless my mum, when
you've
told...
got a tiny jaw.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Oh, it's hidden under all his hair. But I remember telling my mum, and my mum was like, she was so angry, and she, not at me, at this boy, and she was like, you weren't even bothered by your sideburns until he pointed it out. Mm-hmm. And she's like, did you know where we come from? That is, like, one of the hallmarks of beauty, you know? So I... Basically, what she was trying to say is you've been subjected to a beauty standard that, you know, you'd never conform to, Rabs, because you're not English.
Yeah.
You have a little bit in you.
Yeah.
But
I love that your mum, that was your mum's reaction. That's such a wonderful
reaction. I know, but
reaction.
You know what? Even then as a child, I struggled to believe it because all my, you know, from what you see on telly and what you see in the magazines or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I was only like 8 or 9 when this boy called me Elvis. So I wasn't really reading magazines, but all the favourite things that I'd watch on telly, I wasn't represented there. Never. I was never represented in my favourite films or Disney characters.
Probably not until your, like, 20s. I don't remember seeing brown people on TV until I was in stuff that I was watching consistently until I was older, unless it was in a very stereotypical role.
No, I don't remember seeing any movies.
And it's still pretty piss poor.
Yeah,
it is. Like, I don't see any, like, specifically South Asian.
So I had no sort of, apart from my mum and my friends, you know, I didn't have any external, I couldn't consult the world and say, is she right or is she just saying that to make me feel better? Truth is, it was both. She was right and she was doing it to make me feel better. But as a child, you look around at the world to sort of confirm your place in the world, and that was very difficult. So I experienced that a lot younger. But I also, I don't know, and I've probably sound a bit cock-headed, but I knew I wasn't ugly. I also knew I'd been affirmed many times by lots of friends and relatives and even strangers as to how pretty I was. And that, so at the same time, I didn't foster a sense of I'm ugly, I hate myself. It was like, I actually believe, still believe today that I'm beautiful. But I mean it in...
She is. Yeah.
But
she
is. But I
you
mean
can't see right now, but...
not in that way. Not in that... not in that way. What I mean is...
No, own it. Don't.
No, it's like, I know that I have pretty privilege.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And I'd be lying if that didn't get me an interview or a second interview, for example.
Yeah.
Or get me in with certain friendships.
Yeah.
For some reason. People, yeah. You know, so recognise that I've got some I do conform conventionally to some kind of beauty standard because I'm not that dark.
Yeah.
I'm not like, yeah. So do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Is that I'm recognising some a privilege that comes with the aesthetic of how I look.
Yeah.
So get this. The brown girls in my class, a mixture of Pakistani and Bangladeshi Muslim girls who didn't start wearing the hijab until third or fourth year, but I really struggled to fit in with them. They wanted to bunk off school to go meet the boys from a neighbouring boys' school. I didn't want to do that. And I just couldn't... They were rebelling, and I wasn't on board with their rebellion. Yeah. I struggled very much to get on with them. I felt a lot of judgment for how observant I was of my faith and what I liked, my interests.
Yeah.
And I found myself fitting more comfortably with two white girls. One of them is still like my best friend today. And there was no judgment from them.
Yeah.
And they themselves, when I look back on it, were misfits in different ways.
Yeah.
I seemed to gravitate to a group of girls that didn't have a rebellious streak in them. They just wanted to come to school, have a bit of fun with their friends, learn something, and, you know, go on after high school to pursue whatever it is that was we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I found myself a lot more comfortable with my white peers than I did my brown. And I think it was because I really struggled to connect to my heritage growing up.
Yeah, assimilation.
Yeah,
I guess in ways, but also you do find comfort in those who don't judge you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's as simple as that, isn't it?
Exactly.
Or you don't feel judged by. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
don't judge you. I guess, but
I felt I wasn't brown enough, essentially. I mean, wasn't brown enough or Islamic enough.
Yeah,
and like I didn't want to live my high school life conforming to someone's expectation.
Yeah.
And my three or four white friends had no expectation of me at all. And that was a really lovely...
It's freeing.
And that was a really lovely place to be. But then somewhere in my mind was also, I just really want to fit in.
Yeah.
I just really want to be white.
Yeah. Because you felt comfortable.
Survival.
The people who made you feel safe were white.
Yeah.
So that's...
Well, that changes, obviously, as you get older.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's probably a good segue into where we're all at sort of now as well. Because I think it's probably... It's all quite simple. Well, that's how we found each other as well, in a way.
Yeah.
But I had lots of white friends until I went to uni because... There wasn't really any black or brown. I didn't really have any black or brown peers. Very few, like maybe a handful.
Yeah.
Of 1,000 girls. So I just felt like I wanted to just be white and didn't want anything to do with anything that would mark me out as Arab or Egyptian until I went to uni. When I moved to London, I was like, oh my goodness, there are people who look like me. But that's when I felt that I wasn't brown enough.
Interesting.
Or I wasn't, because I'm not Muslim, And because if you spend a really, really long time shunning your history, your heritage, and not learning about it, like I'd been to Egypt a lot of times, but it wasn't something that I thought was cool, which it actually was. It was really cool that I saw the pyramids when I was 2 years old.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like now I think, oh, wow, that's so cool. And you lived in Saudi Arabia. That's amazing. At the time, I was really embarrassed. I was embarrassed by the food that my mum would pack in my lunchbox. And people be like, oh, what's that? Oh, that smells or whatever. And I was really embarrassed by the fact that we would go to a kebab shop on a Saturday night for takeaway. And I thought it was, I thought kebabs were like proper food until I started going out drinking when I was like 16 and people would go for like a dirty kebab. And I was like, this is where my dad takes me.
It's not dirty. It's proper food.
Kebabs were my life. Yum. And people will say things like, oh, the meat is like, you know, dogs or like horses, whatever. And actually, it's only as I've got much older.
Just crispy pancakes, mate.
Yeah, right. It's only as I get older that I realise how like laced with racism that actually was.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember saying it to my dad and him being like, it's healthy, it's meat, it's grilled, it's salad, it's pita bread, there's no butter in it, like in English sandwiches. Anyway,
I love that. And it has seasoning.
It's got some taste.
Flavour. Oh, it's so weird. I've been reflecting whilst you've been talking.
Go on.
And my experiences are quite different but similar. It's like we're running alongside each other, but like, you know, we have different obstacles and different things that, you know, come up for us. And a big part of secondary school actually was that I was sexualized at such a young age. Like my boobs grew. I was wearing a bra when I started secondary school, training bra, and then I had like fully developed like
breasts
by the time it's like 14, 15. And that I was overly sexualized, and that and fetishized. Anyway, it made to seem like this, like, so, like I lost like my innocence because of the way people saw me. Not that I wasn't innocent, but I lost it because of the way people viewed me. Like I felt confused because I was just like, why? Like people made comments about, like I noticed male teachers looking through my shirt. I was literally grabbed by, like it was used to be called grabs, and like where guys would basically grab you. I'd go home and have to sew buttons on my shirt like every evening. And in the end, I went to the head teacher and I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I was like, I'm not going to go home and have to explain to Mama like why I have to be sewing the buttons on my shirt again, because they'd literally ripped my shirt open, which is horrific.
Yes, it is.
It's awful.
But like it was a mixture of that and the way, because I had breasts, the way that I felt boys saw me and how girls didn't want me, you know, to be part of their crowd because of the way that boys viewed me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That really distorted my view of myself more than probably race, but I knew that I didn't really belong with these messy girls who, I don't know, they seem to like breeze through life to me, like, you know, seemingly in comparison to me. And I actually found, again, it was a very mixed group. We were definitely misfits. But I loathed myself. Like, my self-loathing was at an all-time high because I was over-sexualized, because I didn't fit in. I literally didn't. I went from knowing who I was to my core to being shattered. And I don't say that lightly. It was drastic. And it affected me for life. But when I think about like that as like another layer of my identity, is that I was seen as breasts and like as something sexual before I even knew about things properly. And I feel like I don't know what it means, but I'm just sort of speaking about this experience because it is actually horrific. But I did go to the head teacher and we did like sort it out, and they said, you know, and then of course I was like ostracized and bullied for
going to the head teacher.
Because I was, yeah, because then I was accused of like, oh, but you know you really like it. You know you want to sit in my lap. You know you want this. You know you want me to touch your breasts and things like that. I was fucking 14, 15 years old. Like younger, 13, 14, actually. So I feel like all of these like different layers really distorted my image of like who, like primary school Rhythm was so different to secondary school Rhythm. I had no control over the way I was seen, no matter what I did, no matter what I wore, no matter if I put my eyebrows, no matter if I wore, like, you know, whatever I wore, it didn't matter. Whatever I did, it didn't matter because other people had this view of me, which I guess is true to life. Like, you can't, like, people are going to view you how they're going to view you.
Yeah, it sounds more like people were trying to take ownership of you rather than just view you, though.
Yeah, it was. And I guess they did do that as well because, so, I should really talk about this. In year seven, year eight, because this is quite important, is because I started to lie about who I was because of people would say, like, oh, where are you from? Oh, you don't look Pakistani, or you don't look this, or you don't look that. So I started saying yes to whatever people told me I was. Oh, are you Spanish? Yes.
I used to say I was French.
Well, exactly.
I just made it up.
Are you Italian? Yes. So Italian stuck because I have Italian cousins, and then so I told people that I was Pakistani, Welsh, and Italian. I added this whole part of myself for ages, and it stuck with me. Like, if any of my friends are listening, they're like, "Oh my God, she's not Italian." Like, no.
But you felt in that those moments that you were just going to say whatever it is that would invite the least bother.
Yeah.
That you would invite
it
me.
Makes, like, I'm shaking. I feel, like, really emotional about it because I was this is not even an analogy. I was literally chased through the playground when people found out that I wasn't quarter Italian. They literally chased me through the playground and I had to hide until, like, they calmed down. It was like they found out that I was Frankenstein's monster and they wanted to, like, hurt me.
So messed up.
Again, for like who I was or who I said I was. And now I'm thinking about it, and it's like it doesn't matter who you say you are. Like, in a way, well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be like treated that way.
Yeah.
But that started like from when I first, so like to assimilate to this new weird situation. But it was important to me that, like, it's important to me now reflecting back that I lied about who I was. I made more of me white. To try and appease people's perception of who I was because they were like, oh, but you're not this and you're not that. And it makes me so sad, though. I just want to, like, you know, like in RuPaul, when they get to nearer the final, they say, like, what would you tell your younger self? What would you tell, like, 7-year-old Rhythm? Oh, no, I didn't think I was going to cry. I don't know. I'd just say, like, hold on.
That's good advice.
I'm sorry.
No, I feel that.
This is what spilling the chai is all about.
Spill
them chai tears.
Yes. Just say hold on.
You're just crying out the colonial part of the wine. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So it's really complex. So I just say to her, don't forget that confidence of who you know you are. Don't let other people tell you who you are because they don't know. So you're the only person who gets to tell your story.
Absolutely.
That's really
good
advice.
You don't have to give them that.
Do you still need to be told that?
Oh, I think
sometimes.
We all do.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think so.
And I really feel what you said when you were like, you made up this, or you built up your whiteness.
You do build
it. That's exactly what I did. I played up to my whiteness.
That's it. You play up to it.
From shunting the clothes that that my, you know, mum wanted me to wear sometimes because it was nice.
Yeah.
You know, to, you know, my friends would watch Bollywood movies. I got onto Bollywood quite late, like a year ago. And I would watch the big ones.
Yeah.
Because I felt if I didn't watch the big ones, I wouldn't be able to talk to anything. But I felt so disconnected from the cultural aspect of it.
Mm.
And I guess because none of my white peers were into that stuff, it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
That I wasn't.
That's erasure. That's how erasure happens, isn't it? A part of you is completely...
It's really easy for it to disappear.
I just learned that if you were going to get ahead in life, you had to adopt...
Whiteness.
So that's what I had to do. And I had it quite firm in my mind that once I got through college and I get through university, I'd had this path. I was like, I'm going to get educated. And my family firmly believe in education is the key, and I agree.
Yeah.
But I had it in my mind that I was going to get my GCSEs, get my A-levels, go to university. I was absolutely firm on going to a university, which was a decent drive away from home, so I could not live at home.
Yeah.
I wanted to live my best white life.
Yeah.
And I did. And have my sort of phase of rebellion. And then I thought, right, after I've graduated, I'm doing a law degree, I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to get a really good job, I'm going to be a high-powered job, and I'm going to be, you know, one of the first women in my family to be... really successful. And I had this whole path, and in order to get there, I just knew that I had to adopt whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I did. I didn't become a lawyer, but I worked my way up as soon as I graduated, and I looked at all my white peers, and I was desperately frustrated. I was succumbed to a double standard and refused pay rises and promotions because I was good at what I did. They wanted to keep me in my role. So I left many times, different companies to get, you know, when you leave a job, you can command a better salary elsewhere, can't you? So I got lots of pay rises, became moderately successful. And it's not until like these last year or two where I've looked back and I'm like, my bones are physically tired. I've been burnt out the last 5 years since becoming a mother and getting off the hamster race, you know, the hamster wheel, or getting out of the rat race for that period.
Like the hamster race.
And the hamster race. I've been able to look back and see the system that I was in. And I feel, and I'm, to this day, I'm still burnt out.
Yeah.
It is exhausting to go into your place of employment that is an all-white exec board, where you're one of few women of colour and you're one of few women of colour in your pay grade, and there's nowhere for you to go. And it's just tiring to assimilate.
You realised then, like, actually, maybe I was ambiguous, ethically ambiguous then, but I'm not.
Not now.
Yeah. And they've never seen me like that. And actually, that's...
That was my distortion
experience.
Yeah,
well,
that was
it?
My distortion. It was literally like, oh shit, I have been found out this entire time. But what I had to do, I didn't realise that I was working doubly hard and being passed over so many opportunities when my white male peers would literally have them land on their laps for doing fuck all, or worse, on the back of my hard work.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it, and then at first I thought, oh, it's sexism, and now I know it was both. It was racism and sexism. It was basically all the vessels of white supremacy.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise that until I was off it and I was fucking tired. And capitalism, man, it's just, it sucks. Yeah. And so I'm in that world now of wanting to reject it all and burn it down and start again.
Yeah.
But it's taken a long time to get to this point, and I am enjoying at the moment is embracing my cultural heritage again, and looking back on all the times that my mum, through food, through clothing, through religious holidays, and just through what she brought over, and enjoying that again.
Yeah,
and it's like rediscovering and.
Remembering
and just being, I didn't think I was going to cry
We're all getting quiet.
Next, Lucy. You know I won't.
No, no, you don't do tears, do you? Really. Just being my whole self and not shutting it off to please somebody else or somebody's else. And you know, I shut all those parts off because I thought my mum was trying to make me something I'm not. What she was actually doing was trying to give me the tools to navigate who I am in a world that she knew might not quite accept me.
Yeah.
I mean, she had to do it herself. She worked her... She carved out her own niche. I take a lot of inspiration from my mum.
Yeah, same.
She's, like, my biggest hero. But, yeah, just my whole self.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And I think, like, reconnecting these parts of ourselves, like, we hope that we can pass them on to our kiddos, though.
It's healing.
Like, we want, like, through them, we can sort of, all this unlearning and relearning that we're doing is something that we can pass on to them.
Yeah.
And I love that we all, like, one of our biggest connections to us, heritage is food.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's a whole episode.
Yeah, it's just like food is so powerful. And then when you think about appropriation and how that sort of takes away, like food is like, it's so culturally important and connecting. And like you hear it in so many different cultures. Mm-hmm. It's not unique to any one of us. But I love that we've all mentioned food so many times.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Fool of the Week.
Oh, Fool of the Week.
So this is our first Fool of the Week. Yes, so we should explain the concept.
Yeah,
we?
Lucy.
So Fool of the Week is going to be a section each week where we talk about something that we want to get in the bin. And how that pertains to food or how it relates to food is that one of my favorite Egyptian foods is called Ful Nedam, and it's fava beans basically with like delicious spices and lemon
so
juice.
Good.
It's so good. Mm. And you eat it with pita bread and scrambled eggs and white cheese. It's called white cheese. If you do
white cheese.
It's literally called white cheese on the packaging and everything. Yeah. And when I took Ollie to Taj, he was like, Lucy, it's just feta. Why isn't it?
Who is the fool of the week?
Is Priti Patel.
Oh, I hate her.
Wow. I've raged about her on stories.
Hate is quite a strong word, but I do think she can get in the bin.
She can get in the bin.
I dislike what she stands for.
That's exactly it.
Because I don't want to be that person, but I do feel embarrassed because
someone from the South Asian diaspora.
Yeah.
Is in such a privileged
position. Yeah. And it was the same with Sajid Javid.
Oh.
I don't want to use the word traitor, but you know, you just feel a little bit betrayed.
Of course.
But not a quote. Pardon?
Yeah.
But what I think, what we can pull out from the Conservative, from the brown members of the Conservative Party, is that
internalised, colonised,
the toxic whiteness.
You recognise it.
But also the fact that tactic of racists using a brown person to say, because I have heard on Newsnight, I've heard Fiona Bruce say, I should just say, Priti Patel said it wasn't racist, so, mate, Priti Patel has got so much internalised racism.
She's not the spokesperson for brown people.
And
she is so fair-skinned brown person.
Like, and specifically,
you have to take
what's even worse than that.
So this week, there was a hashtag trending called Things Priti Patel Never Did. People were like, there was funny things like, Priti Patel has never wrapped a remote control in cling film. I just tweeted, used it and I was like, oh yeah, Priti Patel has never unlearned her internalised, colonised behaviour that upholds white supremacy. I had like over 100 people like double tap on that. I was just like, I hit a nerve there. But it was true. She's never done that kind of work.
Yeah, because it's true.
You know, she hasn't done that work and it's evident because she's a fucking Tory.
Yeah.
And she's...
Boo.
The policies that she's been bringing in this week, oh my God. She's stupid.
She
thinks she's sick.
I think she is. I think
it's disappointing.
It's super disappointing.
So I use the word traitor. I don't mean that because it's really harsh. But she's. It's disappointing because you're like why must you disappoint me that way? Like, why can you not break the mold? Like, but you know, it is difficult. I do understand that it's difficult because. Like, if you think only in the past year you've sort of been like, oh, actually, I'm not white. Or, like, when you were younger, sorry. But, like, you know, when you realise that you're not white, I think maybe perhaps she thinks that she's still white. And she hasn't, like, she hasn't had that mirror held up to her in that way.
Yeah.
Or she's gone, like, I don't want to look at it right now.
Yeah.
Is she that, or, you know, just all the simple fact of, the only way that I'm going to benefit in this world is by being like this.
Yeah.
You know, and it will be on the back of exploitation. It will be on the back of the poor. Be on the back of the marginalised. The policies that she's been introducing this week with the salary cut-offs and the point system. You know,
and we're trying to export a plane load of Jamaicans
from the Windrush generation.
No, they weren't in the Windrush generation, but they were. But it doesn't.
I mean, it's similar vein.
They all have had very small criminal charges. I mean, it's pathetic. It makes me
well,
so
I think what
angry.
Jeremy Corbyn said in Prime Minister's Questions or whatever when he said, "Would a boy who had taken Class A drugs, a boy who had." I can't remember where. Basically, all the things that Boris Johnson had done.
Yeah,
is he not a good? Because this all speaks to what is a good immigrant and what what does it mean to be a good British person.
Oh, this is it, exactly. It's double standard.
Yeah, because...
It's double and a triple standard.
Yeah.
I know, I mean, we're veering into Shamima Begum territory and she did do a bad thing.
but we don't... But we
yeah...
I can't even.
Yeah.
I won't judge her.
Yeah. No, I won't.
Because she was a child.
She was 15. She was 15, wasn't she?
I mean, I think about 15 years old.
She was groomed. No, she was groomed. She was totally groomed. She was very vulnerable. She's lost all her children.
Yeah.
One of them recently. You know, one of our own, Sajid Javid, pretty much said, no, you're not coming back in. Mm. And she's from here. Mm. And her argument is, well, she can go live in Bangladesh. She
doesn't have any
parents
family.
Are from Bangladesh. Yeah. Her heritage is from Bangladesh, but she's British. She was born here.
Mm.
She has never set foot in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing a very similar thing with these, you know, trying to send these people to Jamaica who've probably never set foot there in their life.
Yeah.
You know,
and some of them have, you know, are essentially being condemned to live on the streets. Because if you go to a country where it would be like, you know, either of you being sent to being deported to Pakistan or like sending me to Egypt. And can you imagine, like,
oh, no.
Yeah,
so no, I mean, it's, I just can't it's even. So it does make me upset because it makes me feel unwanted.
Yeah,
like if you can discard somebody like that who has complexities, but then you only have to look at the prison system, you only have to look at all these other facets of society who are cast aside because they have issues and because of who they are, because of their class.
Yeah, yeah.
That does, unfortunately, still exist. But, you know, it's like all these things, if then you think, of course it's easy for them.
If we did a bad thing, like shoplifted and I stole a lipstick or something from a department store and I got caught, you know, it would be running through my mind, am I a plane ride away from getting back to Islamabad? Do you know what I mean? Is that what's going to happen? Even though my husband's from here and my son is here and he was born here, will I have to go back, you know? Will I have to go back there even though I've never lived there? Apart from, I've lived 11 months there.
Yeah.
You know, so what it's saying is you could be British, but your stay here, if you are not white, is conditional.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you are never truly safe, and you can never truly embody what it means to be British.
But also, we won't tell you what it means.
No.
There are no rules to this.
So that
might
just
change them.
So I understand that. So
Pretty Patel.
So Pretty Patel.
Get in the bin.
She can get in the bin.
Yeah.
The racist policies. And she can...
She can get on the compost too,
actually,
mate.
That my... British passport was, I held that so dear to me from a very, very young age. I always said to me, like, people, like, when they said, like, oh, where are you really from? I'm like, I'm British, because I knew that I had a British passport from
birth. That was your evidence. It's so funny, because on TikTok now, there's this generation of kids that are making funny TikTok videos about their passports, because...
Are they?
Yeah, they're quite funny, because it's like... But, you know, it'll be like, you know, it'll be a black or a brown hijabi, and she'll, like...
Oh, yes!
She'll be like, here's my passport, because I am actually from here. Yeah. You know, to just sort of rebut any of the racist comments that they must be getting on the daily.
Yeah.
So, and I find it quite... You know, they're bolshy, this next generation. Which brings us to our next and final feature, things that we are loving.
Yeah.
So, what I'm loving at the moment is watching cleaning videos on YouTube whilst I feed my four-month-old. And then, I can't tell you, my house has never been so clean. I love cleaning. I love it so much. Happy to. Your house is beautiful. Like, your houses are both clean. And also gardening, because I was sent a beautiful book by my friend Letitia McLuth, which is hashtag gifted. But I sign up to her newsletter, The 5 Minute Gardener. Oh my god, she is amazing. I've got a teeny weeny little Brighton garden. It's tiny, there's hardly any grass, but her whole ethos is 5 minutes every day. It's just a really great book. If you're ever overwhelmed by gardening, get on it. Into the cleaning, into the gardening. How about you?
Me, I am okay, so it's a cleanser.
I was telling you about my tip that my cleaner gave me. Wait for this. So she actually, so I didn't know people did this, okay? So she dusts the bulbs,
yeah, okay?
Which for me was like, whoa, I didn't know people did that. I've never dusted a bulb in my life. But she puts essential oils on it.
Oh, lovely.
So when the bulb heats up, it's like emanates like this lovely little scent as you walk
back around. That is mind blowing. I am I absolutely.
Right, I'm off, guys. I'm going home. I need to clean my bulbs.
Put some essential oils on it. Oh my gosh. That was hilarious.
What are you loving?
What am I loving? So mine's actually beauty related. Ooh. I am into a cleanser. I've been trying lots of different cleansers over the last few months, and every time I run out, I'll try a new cruelty-free fave. But my new one is a cleansing balm by Drunk Elephant. It's I can't remember what it's called, but if you like Google Drunk Elephant cleansing balm, it's their Sly. You get a little spoon with it, so you don't have to stick your fingers in the balm, which I love, because you're not then contaminating it with all the germs of your hands. Mm.
Good.
Yeah, so you get like a little...
Especially in these coronavirus times.
I know. Because what I was having to do with like other cleansing balms is like wash my hands first, dry them and stuff. I mean, and you do that anyway because you don't want to touch your like face with like dirty hands. But this is just an extra handy thing. You can use your little spatula, spoon out your balm, and it's magnetic because there's a little magnet in the lid, so then it'll just stick to the lid so you never lose
game
it.
Game changer.
It's a really big size as well, and it's a good sort of medium price range. So for it to be like a cruelty-free, fragrance-free, there's no irritants in there. It really does melt off all your makeup. It comes with a small little bit of like it's like a bamboo exfoliant booster. So if you want extra cleanliness, you rub a bit of you get a bit of balm and you put a bit of this. They're a bit like the it's a bit like the Dermalogica microfolia. Yeah, it's great. So it's a natural grain from bamboo.
Love that in the shower.
Yeah, and you can just put a little bit on with the balm and it will like get to all the finer points, get all your pores sorted. And it's just absolutely a delight to use. So
can I try it tonight,
please? Yeah, you can try it tonight and it will like melt off all your makeup, which
it is good. I tried it.
You did, didn't you? So I'm into it. Then you tried my Glossier exfoliant and you put it on your eyes.
And I was like, no, don't put it in your eyes.
And now my eyes were stinging. She was like, it's like a chemical exfoliant.
I was like, it's a chemical exfoliant. She went like, all over her eyes, like whoop, whoop, on her eyes.
I know.
What are you loving?
What am I not loving?
Us?
Oh my gosh, no, I love the queer indigo.
I love them.
They're both on TikTok and on Instagram. They've just brought me so much joy with their walks.
Yes.
And they are like ballrooms, like Vogue, you know, like a nod to like voguing and walks. Like they literally just strut. And I've been trying to copy the dance. And it's been terrible. And I'm wearing heels. Like I think you need heels for like the attitude factor. You need to just go watch it and then you can thank me later and thank them first, obviously.
Yeah, no, I love it.
It's just so joyful.
TikTok is bringing me a lot of joy at the moment in general.
Yeah.
It's becoming my place of just sort of escape.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny.
It's about the right sort of time, the tips of the right sort of time for my like attention span too.
Exactly.
Although
be careful because before you know it, you've been an hour on there when you were about to be 5 minutes.
That's why I've stayed away.
Because there's no end.
Yeah, you've got to do it.
There's no end in sight.
That's so true. And the other one actually, which is,
where can people find us?
We're all on Instagram, aren't we? Mm-hmm. So you can find me at @sheflourished_.
I'm at Lucy Lucraft.
And I'm at @beforeandagain_.
Isn't it annoying that we have to have an underscore at the end of our handles?
Do you know it is, but I have spoken about it on Lucy.
Yes!
Podcast, yes.
We'll leave it there. We're going to go and get some
food.
I need a wee.
And a wee. Yeah. I know.
I've not even drank my tea. It's gone cold.
Oh, again!
Blasphemy, cold chai.
Mate, this is the second cold drink.
The tea has been spilled. We're over and out.